Tom Hanks was last here when he starred in the quirky film adaptation of Dave Eggers' A Hologram for the King, and soon he'll be seen in a new Dan Brown blockbuster called Inferno. But before that, he worked with Clint Eastwood on Sully about U.S. Airways pilot Chesley Sullenberger. And I'm very pleased that it brings the versatile Mr. Hanks back to our show to talk about what's being touted as a wonderful, award-worthy movie. Welcome to our show.
Thank you. You make it sound like I'm really testing the patience of the American movie-going public. My apologies.
No, it sounds like you do a lot of different things.
I do. I'm a lucky man that way.
First, for the few listeners who may not know who Chesley Sullenberger is, can you talk a little bit about him and what he accomplished?
Well, he's the man who is the hero of the key player in the Miracle on the Hudson. I believe it was January 15th, 2009. He was looking for a place to land a crippled plane that had just taken off from LaGuardia and put it smack dab in the middle of the Hudson River, and everybody survived.
How unusual is a landing like that?
In fact, extremely unusual. No pilot wants to make a water landing.
Could you even train somebody to do that?
No, not without, you know, pontoons on the bottom of the plane. If you go on YouTube and look at water landings of commercial aircraft, they are uniformly disasters. And it is, well, you want to call it something, and you say, all right, let's put it into a miracle that he put this plane down and people were able to just walk out onto the wings.
Yeah, I would imagine hitting the water the way a plane would split it open.
It's a matter of 3 inches on either side. If the wing tip catches or the nacelle of the engine lands before the other one, the plane cartwheels and breaks apart.
I heard that Clint Eastwood had been involved in a water landing years ago.
Yeah, he was 21. He was merely a passenger on some sort of a military aircraft. He couldn't even talk to the pilot. He was back in some other section of it. And he heard everything start going wrong, and then he heard the engine cut out. And the next thing you know, he was somewhere in the water off Point Reyes in Northern California. And it was very cold, and he had to swim. They were in the water for quite some time. And as he likes to now say it, the shark-infested waters of the Bloody Triangle, as that part of the Pacific is known.
How much did you know about the story before you read the script?
I only knew what I had seen in the media of the story on the day, and I had met Sully, as he is commonly known, and his wife Lori, when he was in the kind of like Heroes tour just a few weeks after the event itself.
Under what circumstances?
I was at the Academy Awards party, believe it or not. And somebody came up and said, hey, would you like to meet Sully Sullenberger, the hero of the Miracle on the Hudson? And I said, yeah. And we chatted very, very briefly. And I just said, how are you handling the celebrity of it? Because it's not all autographs and sunglasses. He was very pragmatic and humorous about it. But until I read the screenplay, I had no knowledge beyond really the single one act of what went down, that he put the plane safely on the water and everyone survived.
Although I can't give away too much, but the film gives us a number of different versions of that story.
Yeah.
And also there's a darker story involved.
Well, the NTSB hearing hung over him like the sword of Damocles, both he and Jeff Skiles, who was the first officer. It's not a prosecutorial process, but it is a fact-finding process. And so you have experts who are asking every conceivable question about what went on before the flight, what went on during the flight, and why choices were made. And he did not know, nor did Jeff Skiles know, if they were going to be found to have done the right thing, exonerated, or was there some fault that could be placed in the choices they made that day.
And the proceedings are adversarial.
It's funny, Sully would say no, they are not, because they are not trying to convict anybody of doing anything wrong. But they will place blame on the cause of any accident. What was unique about the investigation was they were talking to the surviving pilot and first officer. More often than not, they're trying to determine the facts from only a voice recorder and data.
I'm speaking with Tom Hanks, who stars as Sully Sullenberger in a new film called Sully. I understand that although Clint Eastwood had you in mind for the role, he didn't think he could get you.
Well, I had been on a particular tear of working, and I knew I had another task coming up right after that. And because of the season and because of the shooting schedule, this movie was going to have to start shooting in October, and I didn't feel as though I was prepared. So I fought against even reading the screenplay until I had no recourse. So I read Todd Kamernicki's screenplay, and I think I was done with it in 17 minutes. And like you, and I think like everybody, I found out Act Two and Act Three of the story. And then it was just a matter of talking to Clint on the phone. He was in a car in California. I was in a hotel in Budapest. And all we could really communicate over the satellite lag time was, well, if it works out, let's do it. You know, if I can be available, I'll be there.
Well, Clint Eastwood has turned out to be one of the best directors of our time. I'd imagine since you've worked with some of the other greats that you were curious about working with.
Oh, the desire was there without a doubt. I simply didn't know if I had the wherewithal. Fatigue. I had put my head down and been working, if not actually working, knowing when my next job was going to be coming up and preparing for it mentally and physically for about the last 6 years, and I had given myself this break. The thing about Clint is he does shoot very fast.
He's supposedly a no-nonsense director.
Oh, you'd have to remove a couple of the letters from no-nonsense. Here's the thing. He, in the course of all of his work on movie sets as actor, writer, director, he has seen every possible way to waste time. And it's anathema to him, and he doesn't stand for it. And sometimes it's a waste of time in order to discuss it or rehearse something that is so obvious it just needs to be. You got to sit in place and do it.
He's also joked about the bloated budgets of some films and said that these films cost more than invading an island republic.
There is a lot of money that could be wasted, and I think part of that certainly comes from. There are certain demands, but if you're just capturing the story as Clint wants to do, I will tell you, this was a huge movie. I mean, we had a massive crew on the Hudson. We had a huge crew in all the trucks that you'd want in Atlanta and also in Universal Studios where we shot a lot of the water landing taking place. So it's as big a movie as I've ever seen as far as personnel and hardware goes. But the screenplay was segmented in a way that you could easily see how let's not waste any time. There's not a lot of we have the record, we have the screenplay, we know what happened. Let's shoot.
And what was it like when you first met Eastwood?
Well, I had known him socially a couple of times, and we have something in common. We grew up in Oakland, California. Different generations, but we're East Bay guys, and so we always had that in common.
He even ran as mayor of one of the
Carmel. Carmel is a snooty place, you know, down there. He made the mistake of getting involved, and I think he still rues the day. But if you come, Oakland, understand, lives in the shadow of San Francisco, and we always look over at this Emerald City across the bay, and it's this kind of place. Should we someday? Will we make it? That we always just stayed in the East Bay and ran around.
I know because I have a sister who lives in Walnut Creek.
Oh, I was born not far away from Walnut Creek.
But then you met Sully Moore after, not just at that party. Yeah. How much time were you able to spend with him?
Very particular man in which we had an email relationship that went on for a while. That culminated in about a four-hour meeting with him at his home.
And what did you feel was important for you to know before you took on the role?
I think the stakes, the personal stakes that he was facing. That's more or less what the screenplay in the film is about. There is the event, and then there is everything, the post-traumatic stress of the event, and it was substantial. He spent about 9 months of his life not knowing whether or not he was going to get a pension and be able to afford to pay for his house, never mind have his reputation preserved or torn up and made a tatters because of the investigation.
Although he was on our show, and although he seemed to be in perfectly good mental health, he said that Because of this experience, he never wanted to fly a plane again, at least not commercially.
He was nearly at the end of his career, and yes, I think that's true. I will say that it's not necessarily in the film, although we did put in a number of the details of the reality of it. It's a harsh business. It's a cutthroat, cut-rate business. And I was just in front of a room full of about 600 people talking about it, and the audience gasped when I told them that the airlines do not feed their pilots, which is why Sully buys a tuna sandwich from the lady in LaGuardia Airport. And I thought Todd had put it in the screenplay to show that he's just a regular guy and, aw, shucks, I could get by. No, the fact is that was his lunch, because they do not have the flight attendant come in and say, hi, guys, who wants a Salisbury steak? They don't do that. You got to buy a tuna sandwich and a banana.
At least they didn't charge him for a second suitcase.
That's gone, long gone. Here's another. I asked Sully just a couple of days ago about the luggage from that flight. He said the only people who lost their bags were the people who tried to take it off the plane with them in the Hudson.
Ah.
If you had checked your bag on that flight, you got it back from U.S. Airways. About 3 months later, separated, waterlogged, but cataloged. So I think, man, that's a PR bit answer for U.S. Airways, that they should make something about that.
How much time did you have to prepare for the role? Some actors say, I just go in, I read the script.
Oh, dear, no.
And others, I have to research.
Oh, there's a massive amount of research to be done. There's a lot of reading to be done. You got to learn a degree of muscle memory, as well as the mental condition that goes into it. I started working on it as soon as I read the screenplay. I had a long list of questions, some of them very practical, some of them metaphysical, that you search out the answers for. We also flew a simulator up in the Bay Area with Sully right there. There's a lot of tactile environmental stuff that you can do, but it takes time.
Beyond reading his book about the experience, yeah. What else did you read?
Well, mostly I watched videos. I watched a lot of cockpit in-flight kind of like record stuff. I watched a lot of takeoffs and landings. I listened to a lot of air traffic control transcripts. And there's no small amount of information about the incident, the forced water landing itself. That was days and days of reading and research.
You said something about it being metaphysical.
Well, these are guys that choose to take on this job. And it requires training. It requires years of experience. But it also requires, I think, for lack of a better word, moxie. Or confidence to have four stripes on the sleeve of your uniform and walk onto a plane and have the contract state that I'm in charge here and I will get you there. And if I do my job purposely, the most thing you'll remember is whether or not you got your luggage back on time or not.
My guest is Tom Hanks, who stars as Captain Chesley Sully Sullenberger in Clint Eastwood's Sully, which is opening today in theaters around town. We'll continue our conversation after this. We're back with Tom Hanks, who is starring as Captain Chesley Sully Sullenberger in Clint Eastwood's latest film called Sully. It opens today in theaters around town. Is it at all weird when you're playing someone who you have met, as opposed to creating a character from scratch?
It's horrifying to play somebody.
Because you can't do the Rich Little thing.
Well, you can't. You have to get into some other brand of DNA or some sort of like verbal signature of him, where you have to carry yourself in a certain kind of like carriage or gait, a G-I-G-A-I-T. Mm-hmm. But look, I have to sit down with, I've done it now with four people who are actually alive, and I have to have this conversation. I have to say, I'm going to say things you never said, and I'm going to do things you never did. I'm going to be places you never were. And yet, I have to do it with as much authenticity as you will allow me to. And look, some of the people didn't care, but Sully, for example, he walked me through every single line of the script that he had a question about or a problem with. And screenplays are malleable things. You can shape them. You can correct an awful lot of stuff. But there's other areas where I had to say, look, Sully, you then have to help us. We have to get into this moment that is beyond words on a page. So help me understand what went on here. And I must say, he was awfully, because he had written the book, he was awfully good about trying to do that.
You've never been a pilot, I imagine.
I've flown a plane. I've taken off. I've landed. And Jim Lovell, the commander of Apollo 13, forced me to fly in the dark West Texas skies for about 4 hours one night. So I've flown a plane. I'm a little bit aware of the physics involved.
And Jim Lovell is just one of the real life characters that you've played. Also, Congressman Charlie Wilson in Charlie Wilson's War. There's Captain Phillips in Paul Greengrass's movie. Even Walt Disney in Saving Mr. Banks.
Well, I didn't talk to him. I talked to his daughter, so she gave me some 411.
Mike McAleary on Broadway in
Nora
Ephron's play, Lucky Guy.
God, I got to read my bio to remember who these people. Mike McAleary had passed away, but I talked to an awful lot of his friends.
I just wondered if it's at all inhibiting when you're playing a real person.
Here's what the challenge is for me. You're dealing is essentially with a document of nonfiction entertainment that's, for good or for bad, is going to be held up as some form of the official record.
And people who are seeing the movie are going to think this is exactly what happened,
yes. And so I think my job is to, within the confines of that, be as, what's the word I'm looking for, historically authentic or emotionally true to the motivations of the people involved. And I must say, I produce a lot of nonfiction entertainment through the company Playtone that I run with some other people. And my biggest bone of contention, and I beat the living daylights out of an awful lot of writers when they decide to make something up to make manifest an idea. I say, why are you making something up? Is it too hard to find out... Is it too hard to find out what really happened to dramatize it? You lazy guy, you know, whatever. So, and, you know, they fight back sometimes.
Well, Hollywood had a bad reputation as far as biopics are concerned.
And, you know, I will tell you.
Cole Porter was not like the guy in that movie.
As a young man, I suffered because of this, because I was a naive guy. I thought, oh, it must have been like that. That must have been like, Back to Patan was like, or the story of Madame Curie. I thought, well, obviously they can't lie. That's against the law, right? They have to tell the truth in these movies. And it screwed me up as far as, being the lay historian that I am.
You mentioned that a part of it is how you carry yourself, but how important is makeup, in this case, even having white hair? Does that help you get into the role?
Well, I think what it does is it removes the division between the movie and the audience. Sully had white hair. And if I'm not going to have white hair, the first question anybody's going to be, how come he doesn't have white hair? So you subject yourself to, I'm going to say, I spent 3 days in beauty parlors all around Manhattan and Los Angeles as they tried to figure out a way in order to make my hair white. It's not, you cannot dye your hair white. You have to bleach it, paint it, put it through acid, burn it. My scalp suffered tremendously. And then I find out that the hair on your head is very different from the hair on your face. And essentially, I had to have my mustache painted every day against the grain. You know, they had to pull out one mustache hair at a time and paint the undercarriage of this stuff. It was maddening. But I sat there and meditated on the work of the day and got through it. Uptown problems, Leonard. Those are uptown problems.
You've recovered.
My hair is back to normal. I survived. But it started to fall out in the course of making the movie. And my crack team of hair and makeup people never told me that they were plugging little wiglet pieces onto my wrap, because a little piece about the size of a bulb, the head of a pin would fall out, and they'd have to cover that up.
Your version of Sully is a quiet, reserved, thoughtful man, confident yet a little tight-lipped. I think the movie makes it clear that there is some turmoil underneath the surface calm. How helpful was reading his book and understanding that?
His book was amazing in that it broke down in detail those 208 seconds the reasons for it, as you know, all his life up to that point. What it didn't provide was anything about the months after. And when I met him, I said, "Sully, why is the hearing not in your book?" And he said, "Well, it hadn't happened yet." He wrote the book just months after the incident, and out it came. And what I got was the life of a professional aviator, but the thought processes of the 100 seconds that he had to make the landing.
But you've said that he paid a price for it, especially. Yeah. The National Transportation Safety Board hearings. What do you mean by that?
The waiting for the shoe to drop was something that haunted him every single minute of the day, because it is his reputation, because it is ends up going back and questioning himself. It's kind of like if you nearly kill somebody in your car. And you screech on your tires, and yet somehow there's no crash and no one gets hurt. You relive that experience because you're aware of what could have happened. That, too, haunted Sully continuously. Never mind losing his pension, getting his license taken away, and being blamed for something that had been determined to be his fault. That's a burden that he lived with for 9 months. We condense it in the film, sort of. You just have to know that it was very huge. He had an accelerated heart rate for the better part of the year. Wondering what was going to happen.
And it looks like he's going through some issues with his wife, Laurie, played wonderfully by
the fabulous Laura Linney. Yes.
Do the two of you actually share any scenes in the movie, or is she always she's always in California and he's always here?
We shot all of our scenes. When I shot my side of the telephone call, she was on the phone, and when they shot her sides, I was on the phone to her. But
Is that important in getting a sense of the chemistry between them?
Oh, yeah.
Because you could have shot them separately and nobody would
have
known.
Yeah, but then you get to play it out in real time. And you get to – it's a game of give and take, and it's back and forth. It ends up not being a thing about lines. It becomes a thing about the connection between the two of them. And I would say, from my perspective of it, those are probably the most authentic scenes in the film. Their relationship is a very tight one.
You mentioned flight simulators and the like, but even more important than the physical motions you had to go through, I would think you had to work things out with Aaron Eckhart, who plays your co-pilot, Jeff Stiles, because there's so many rapid things that go on between the two of you.
The baseline requirements for the two of us was to look like we knew what we were doing in the cockpit.
And is that what a director tells you? Look like you know what you're doing?
Well, Clint probably was torturing us by never talking about it and just leaving it to us. We ran it 100 million times, and when we are actually we shoot variations of the cockpit scenes over the course of the entire movie, because some of it is in LaGuardia, some of it is in the tank, some of it is on the actual soundstage where all the bells and whistles are operating. There's only one thing you can do is learn what it is and follow through. And if you have a question about why we're doing it, there's an expert there to answer that question.
Now, Clint, of course, is a former actor. Do you think that affects the way he directs? Oh. Does he give you more leeway because he didn't want directors telling him what to do?
I wish leeway was the word that I could use. I think expectation is the bigger aspect of it. Here's what he does. You get a sense that he truly does love actors, knowing what it was. He knows how intense and personal. He knows how really actors cannot verbalize it as much as they can inhabit it, and that's a different form of communication. What he does is, which I found extraordinary, is the camera may or may not be running. You have no idea. It might be, there's no, and by, ready, stand by, everybody. Okay, we're on a bell, and... 3, 2, and action! He does not, that's the way a lot of movies are made. This is how you know the camera's running, because Clint says, just off your shoulder, okay, anytime.
That's it.
And then you do it, and maybe as you're doing it, he'll say, run it through just once more, just to see what happens. And then you do it, and then he'll say, no, that's enough of that. And that's when you know you cut. Now, you think, is that a gimmick? Is that some, what it is? It's an easing, relaxing way into saying we're in this moment. it's not something that is at the top of the pyramid. It's actually part of the foundation of the movie.
Also suggests that he trusts you. That's why they say so much of an important part of the success of a film or a play is the casting. If you you cast the right people, you trust them to do the job right.
Yeah, he does. I asked him why he didn't do the big action thing, and I don't know if to take this the right way or not, but he said because when he did Rawhide, when the first AD yelled action, it always scared the horses. So I'm saying, let me get this straight, Clint. You're saying you don't want to scare the horses on Sully? So that's why we get the quiet little nod? All right. Thanks so much for the confidence.
I'm talking with Tom Hanks. You probably recognize that voice. He stars as Captain Chesley Sully Sullenberger in Clint Eastwood's new film called Sully. And you have some wonderful dialogue. Someone calls the incident unprecedented, and you reply, everything is unprecedented until it happens.
Yeah. Yes, yeah. There's so much common sense stuff that seems to be one of the things is in the incident itself. It was what was avoided that is so extraordinary to me. I mean, I was in California when this happened. I turned on the TV and saw people standing on the wing of the plane in the middle of the Hudson River, and it's like, how did that thing get there? Then I immediately thought that somebody in a building on either side of the Hudson, New Jersey, New York, saw a low-flying commercial airliner against the skyline of Manhattan in 2009. What in the world did they think was going to happen? So the fact that there was no wreckage, there were no dead bodies, the first responders saved everybody's life. It was extraordinary. Oh, man, we dodged a bullet there.
In other Eastwood movies like Flags of Our Fathers and American Sniper, he dealt with the price of fame and how demanding it is to be a celebrity, and that comes through here as well. Does that ring true for you?
Well, you're not going to get anybody's sympathy by saying, ooh, it's so hard being a celebrity.
A number of celebrities complain about the constant, the paparazzi and all that, and people coming up to them.
Pardon my use of the word. Look, it's not all autographs and sunglasses, I'll give it, but the bigger thing is at 3 o'clock in the morning, I think everybody asks, do I deserve any of this attention? I'm doing a job that I love. I got lucky because the stuff I was in turned out to be okay. But I also understand the fact that I've been in an awful lot of living rooms over the course of the years. People have invested their evenings, if not their $8 or so, in movies that had me in them. And if they were not disappointed, that means I might have been part of something that was delightful. And that's a tangible and valuable thing.
At another point in the film, you're talking to your co-pilot and you say, we did our job.
Yeah, yes.
And you or Sully also says, I've got 40 years in the air, but in the end, I'm going to be judged for 208 seconds.
I think that's the reality of the way the world works. You can be perfect and never attract any attention to yourself, and yet if something goes wrong, you'll forever be known as the guy who crashed the plane in the Hudson.
I don't want to spoil anything for viewers, but the movie goes through the accident several times, and each time it gets harder to watch. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like we have learned all the things that can go wrong.
Did they
shoot them all in sequence, or were they all done at different times?
Well, they're all done at different times, in and out of place. But that's part of the structure of Todd's screenplay. But as you get more and more, I think, as you get more and more familiar with what happened, the possibilities for things going wrong become much, much more at the surface. I must say that when we the first time we stepped on the plane in the movie was at LaGuardia, and it was an actual. It was the same Airbus plane. And
amazing you got to LaGuardia, considering all the traffic.
Oh, dear Lord, it took forever. But seeing how many empty seats were on that plane from front to back, I actually thought, how did they get out of here? How did they get out of here so ordinarily? So it was such organization.
It's also great to see you jogging through New York City streets as a way of dealing with the stress of both the attention and
He's
the
a air. Very fit guy. As a matter of fact, you say, hey, Sully, what'd you do today? Well, I got in my run. It's one of the first things he'll say. He's very much aware of his heart rate, his body fat, his mileage. It's a demonstration of how particular a man he is.
Do you jog?
No, I do. My knees are shot from, and my undercarriage from all these other things I've had to do in order to prepare for movies somewhere. I do a lot of yoga and I do a lot of bike riding.
There are a number of real people from the rescue teams
yes.
in the movie. Did they take their role seriously? I mean, obviously they knew how to do their jobs.
They did. You know, the call went out, and there's no, why not get the real people who were there? They're still in their jobs. We were, when the first day of shooting was on the Hudson, and not only the tugboat that we were working on, it was in the picture, but also the holding tugboat, the boat that held all the crew, was piloted by guys. And the extraordinary part is they were out on the water, and they saw the plane land, and they just steered right towards it. Instincts all the way around.
This is going to have special resonance for New Yorkers because it's a very post 9/11 story when people were very conscious of things involving airplanes going badly.
Right. Yeah.
Now, having done this film, has it at all changed the way you feel when you're on a plane?
No, I've never had a problem flying. When those guys come on board, I can see the expertise. I like seeing gray hair, I must say, on a pilot. But I know the physics of it all pretty well. The thing that is extraordinary, though, is when you find out some aspects of the way the professional the airline industry has progressed. There's some things that would give me pause. For example, I said, well, obviously now your procedures are all in all the flight books that are in every cockpit now. They know they have a better process of what to do when you lose engines at 5,000 feet. He said, not at all. Hmm. It's too expensive to draw up all those pages and put them in every one of the books and every one of the planes.
It was very cold when the actual thing happened. Was it cold when you were shooting?
Not as cold as it was on the day. I escaped with my life because I did not have to get wet. They were saving those shots for Los Angeles. I got wet in L.A., but it's different to be shooting in Los Angeles in November than it is on the water here in October.
When you look at the finished film, do you have favorite parts?
The parts that surprise me, sometimes I'm in them and sometimes I'm not. I used to have a difficult time getting past the self-loathing that goes into watching yourself up on screen.
Why did I deliver that line like that?
I sound like an idiot, and it's never going to change, and it's like that now for the rest of time. I'm over that now because I realize that this has really been meticulously pieced together by people who have examined it backwards and forwards. I don't think there is an arbitrary moment in any of the movies that I've made, because between the editor and the director, they really go over this stuff. So I'm immune to those horrible feelings now.
And it doesn't hurt when you work with directors like Robert Zemeckis, Steven Spielberg, Ron Howard, or Clint Eastwood.
Yeah. Nora, I miss her horribly. Oh, Penny Marshall as well. Every director is completely different, but my job is four things. I must show up on time. I have to know the dialogue. I have to have an idea beyond what is in the screenplay, and I must delight that person, you know, that person who is in charge. If they want to do it again, let's do it again. If they're all done, then I'm all done too.
And we're all done right now.
Well, God bless. You know what? Time at WNYC just goes by too dang fast.
Tom Hanks stars as Captain Chesley Sully Sullenberger in Clint Eastwood's latest film called Sully. It opens today in theaters around town. What a pleasure to talk with you.
It's mine, Leonard. Thank you.